This week on the Countdown Podcast, we're counting down the worst 10 canon films. Come on back.
Wow.
Welcome to episode 363 of the Countdown Podcast, folks. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. This week, as mentioned at the top there, the worst 10 canon films. This idea comes from top-level patron Sai Wazow. Thank you, Sai, for your support of the show.
Sai.
Now, Sai originally said to us, count down the best 10 canon films. Let me tell you a story, ladies and gentlemen. When we were planning that particular week's show a couple of weeks back, we were in the Uncharted premiere, and Wayne and I were sitting there waiting for the film to start, and we were scrolling through the patron ideas, some excellent ideas there. We have as many top-level patrons now as we can fit to do a couple of shows a year as requested by these good folk with their hard-earned money that they're parting for to help the show and keep the lights on. Now, Sai had said, as the best 10 canon films, Wayne's like, show me a list of these canon films. So we started looking through them. Wayne's like, I can't do this. There's no way I can do 10 films.
That's right.
We need to do worst 10 films. So, all right. So I wrote back to Sai, who was good enough to say, sure, do the worst 10. I just want you to hear you talk about basically canon films. And then, ladies and gentlemen, 3 nights ago, I was sitting at home playing some Warzone with friend to the show, Christian, and a message comes through from Wayne. Hey, there's some great films here in Canada. We should do the best 10.
No, what I was saying was, sometimes you want to keep your powder dry with these lists. You're like, those movies are actually not bad, but I want to talk about them. But if we're going to make it a good show, does it go in my list? That's what I'm asking, okay? But Paul's like, motherfucker, you said last week that we thought that. I was like, oh shit, sorry, motherfucker. All right, all good.
I could hear you angling like, we should change it to this one. And I'm like,
No, I said, should we keep our powder dry for a future show? Okay. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
We will see how it goes. Maybe we'll come back around to the best canon films anyway. So if you want to get involved in supporting the show and have a look at the levels there, including the top level, which is choose your own countdown, head up the Patreon feed, which is in the link is in our show notes, as well as on our webpage, thecountdownpodcast.com. Now, before we go any further, Wayne, we have some news.
We do. For we the do. Listeners. Paul, are you happy with how your dick and balls look?
As a middle-aged man?
Be honest with me.
No.
No, me neither. I mean, like, it's fine. And by the way, everyone,
this is not the news.
It's not the news. But, like, I suspect Paul actually's got a hog. No, because, like, sometimes, right, the bathroom is right next to the studio. And sometimes when Paul takes a piss between takes, I don't want to get too TLC on you, but fucking waterfalls.
Damn.
So I reckon Paul's got a bit to do with his fucking...
My wife would complain about the same thing. Wakes her up at night, I mean.
Crashing
water. I mean, no, wait, when I'm pissing. No, what we're trying to get to here is the fact that we have signed on with Manscaped.com.
That's right, we got ourselves a sponsor.
A sponsor for the next month or so on the show, and we are partnering them to help bring to you their brand new upgrade.
That's right.
Their upgradest trimmer so far.
Damn great. It's the...
Lawnmower.
Lawnmower 4.0. It used to be a 3.0, but now it's a 4.0. Know what I mean? So they sent us a pack.
Well, we both got one.
We both got
so
one.
So we're speaking as we hold it in our hands.
Yes, and I've always thought about Manscaped because I'm very
the tool, not
the exactly. Yeah. Yes, but like you know, I've been a manscaper for quite some time, Paul.
I also have given this a bash on more than one occasion, and can I just say, in the past, before I got onto Manscaped, Carrie.
Jesus.
It was not a pleasant experience. Oh, it took God. A lot of sweat, tears, blood, sweat and blood. Blood. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Bleeding sack. That's not the best. No. That actually can't happen with the lawnmower 4.0.
Sure, it can't happen, but it's much less likely to happen.
Check it out. Ceramic blade, all right? So, I'm sorry, I gave it a whirl, everyone. I only got the pack 3 days ago,
sorry for? That's the whole point.
I know, but like, literally, as I opened it up, first of all, this is a high-end pack. It's got ball deodorant, it's got ball toner, it's got fucking the unit, it's got a cradle, it's wireless charging, it's gangster, man. And it's got a little bag as well, so it's the shit.
If waterproof.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got an ear, nose, and the big pack.
Is that ear, nose, trim?
I haven't given that one a bash yet, but I will.
Dude, that's going up there. That's going right up there, okay?
Now, just to clarify. Nose and ear.
That's right.
Good. Right.
Don't stick it up your clam or anything like that. That's fucking nasty. Right?
So, oh my God.
And we'll give it to you for 20% off.
Very important.
If you just hit manscaped.com and insert the code CDPC20.
Countdown podcast 20, in other words. So yeah, CDPC20. Enter that in there. 20% off free shipping from wherever Manscaped download, I assume it's an American company.
Exactly. Yeah. If you've ever thought about this, like I have on many occasions, this thing has a light that lights up your taint so you don't have them Paul Prezula fucking blood sport shit going on. All right? None of that shit,
Indication!
Right? And it's got four combs, so you can choose your length. You know what I'm saying? I go fucking bladeless, man. I go combless.
Why not?
But.
Go hard or go home.
No, but it's not all the way down. It's just kind of happy to see you. You know what I'm saying? It's happy to see you.
Yeah, it doesn't rip the hairs out.
There's
the
no long hairs. No, it's just kind of I'm an old man. Yep. You know? So.
No. Gentlemen, you owe it to yourself. And if you've got a partner, you owe it to them as well.
You definitely owe it to them because no one likes to get, you know, sort of get back up again. And then you got to pick hairs out of your goddamn teeth.
Bushmen of the Kalahari. Exactly, Bushwomen. Bushmen exactly. Of the Kalahari.
That's right. Yeah.
There it. So CityPC20 at manscaped.com and get 20% off and free delivery. All right, that's it for the promo of this part of it. Let's get into the show proper with the first segment. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
Let's go, Paulie. What did we get in the inbox this week?
Well, all relates to last week's show, episode 362, the top 10 Warner Brothers films, Warner Brothers Studios films. Now, first of all, from Movie Mosh Pit on Twitter, they got a big laugh here from their tweet reply to our episode. Paul, don't say it. Wayne, titties. Paul, he said it. That's a quote from when we were talking, I believe, about Lethal Weapon.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, look at that. Hilarious.
Now, Binge Lord Dan, or if you like, Mina Harker in the Facebook list community, said, allow me to set some light, sir, on my own criteria when voting. I had to tend to judge each of you against yourselves.
Interesting.
You're the logical one. I just vote for the logical sense of your list. Wayne is the emotional one, so I'll judge how much he can convince me, which is an interesting way
of
going about it. My reply was, well, if you mark me down for not being logical, then you should mark Wayne down for when he is logical.
Once again, Paul the damn lawyer walks in.
Now, Rob Walters, again, the Facebook community, said, I finished up the top 10 Warner Brothers movies, and I realized this would be the perfect episode to sum up the podcast. I've been listening for apparently years now, and this is the one that is quintessential countdown. Paul is going for quality movies that many of us would expect him to pick. Wayne is playing jazz in the corner by himself and loving it, and Paul just cannot fathom what Wayne is doing or why. It's exactly what we are all here for.
Oh nice.
So, to the results, then, of last week's vote. 17 votes for you, Wayne. Royally spanked. 61 votes for me.
I had to look at this and I'm like, whoo, everyone's going to leave a mark.
I feel a little bit like Henri and the Cheers episode. France has won.
Well, there's something you never hear.
So apparently I'm getting, according to Chris Yeaney, patrons of the show, reckons I'm becoming a supervillain on this particular podcast. Jonathan Kidd says, I have to defend Wayne. The Prestige is Nolan's best film by far, not his best looking or best character, his best film. Now that's out of the way, vote for Paul.
There you go.
Darren Clark said, revoking my Wayne voting block because not because of his ludicrous list, but because Wayne calls movies shows, and that is the hill I'm willing to die on.
I think that's technically correct, though.
Jamie Davies says, whilst there are one or two eclectic slash batshit choices on Wayne's list, the rest were all great picks deserving of the win this week.
Kind, but apparently not.
John Aventa, the Fighter Comics podcast. Wayne doubles down on his Goodfellas bullshit. Paul says that Fury Road is the best Mad Max film when the Road Warrior clearly is. I abstain from this vote. I cast shame on you both.
I'm also fine with that.
Your cousin, Mike T, said Swordfish. Agreed.
See, Swordfish is the shit, y'all. Swordfish is the bomb.
Did I emphasize your cousin enough when I said that part?
Fuck y'all.
And Connell Tobin McNeil said, Wayne's list this show makes me jealous of the weed they must have in Australia. Anyways, vote for Paul. So there you are. Thanks to everybody who got back and for this week.
And may I say, happy now, Slunt? We happy now, all right?
I'm happy that people voted on the list mostly.
Eat some dicks.
This week, all bets are off. It's
always off.
This one is going to offend a lot of people. But that said, we'll have to talk a bit about canon on the other side of this music cue because we should explain what canon all were all about
and
how they operate. Let's do that then on the other side of this. The worst canon is the subject of this week's countdown. Wayne, tell us about canon and how and who they were and came to be.
Oh, yes. Folks, in 1979, Menachem and Yoram Globus, these Israeli cousins who dominated Israel's film business, paid 600 grand for Canon.
Fuck all.
600 grand.
I know.
Which was a failing American distributor founded in, like, the 60s. Anyway, there's a documentary called Electric Boogaloo, the old story of Canon Films. And
I think I briefly reviewed that on the very first ever Top 10 Last 10 that
Dude,
we did. 2014. Check it out.
Yeah, it's wicked. Golden Globus, the Canon Films, they used to do unbelievable shit. Like, they would sell an entire movie on the strength of a poster.
Yep. They would get backers in on that basis. They would say, this is going to kill it. And they would be spending money they didn't have by getting other backers to back that one, and then getting other backers to back this one.
A movie Ponzi scheme.
Yep.
And that's
basically what it was.
Yeah. And so this is all this weird shit that happened in that time. And basically, it's mostly the 80s, really. Like, 90s, they started just distributing, right? But 80s mostly is...
Well, they split up somewhere around about, I think, 89.
Yeah, it's got some sort of, like, very...
Yeah,
like,
they went their separate ways, and then true to form, they then created competing Lombarda films, which both were released on the same day.
I've seen both of them, bro.
They're both shit.
It's, you know, they're shit. But, like,
not
this
that,
is the
well, from what little I've seen, I haven't seen them all.
No, I've seen, sadly, you're right. Yes, apparently they used to have shit like, they would say there's no extensions on time. If you whatever you've got, footage is turned to an editor, and no matter how incoherent the results, that's what they've got to work with. And can you imagine having that job? Holy shit, right?
Well, it worked for a decade.
That's the thing. These guys were crazy, sort of, I guess, successful insofar as they've actually delivered some class, which we'll get to if we ever get to the best of Canon films. But most of it is fucking shit.
And, like, if you were about our age or a little bit younger and you were going to video stores in the late 80s and hiring stuff out, and your parents, like mine, would leave me in there to, you know, to pick two or three films, which would take me a good 30 minutes of choosing, you know, looking at all these boxes on the shelf. A lot of those films were Canon films. It's incredible the amount that they were releasing.
To me, Canon seems like a Betamax video cover. Like, I had a Betamax, right? So, but you saw all those shitty old ones, which we'll go through here, but that just looks like the 80s video store to me. So, yeah, they were huge.
All right, then. That's our intro to Canon Films and what they're all about. Now, Si, they're obviously a big favorite company of his, company of his. Wayne, lead us away then with your number 10 worst example of the shit that they were putting out.
Cool. Well, when I was a youngster in the 80s, Paul, I was big on anything that had the word ninja in it. Ninja, all right? I was all about that. I later on became a ninja because I liked it so much in my teens, all right?
Oh, please don't steal my thunder. There's a lot of ninjas, though, in this.
Oh, no, there's a lot of ninja shit. Well, look, this one here is one that me and my friends in the dojo as I was like 15 years old or whatever it was, right? And we all studied that shit, and it was bullshit.
The right timeline shit.
Dude, it's Enter the Ninja.
No, it's not that one.
Okay, good. This number 10 is Enter the Ninja. Everyone. Woo! People. First of all, it's about ninjas, as you may imagine.
Being entered into?
Yeah, but here's how it works. The lead guy is Franco Nero, who's white as fuck.
Oh, yeah. Right?
And what happens is, the film's about a martial artist like this Franco Nero guy who's visiting his friend Frank in the Philippines. When he gets there, he learns that the friend is being harassed by this wealthy businessman who's trying to fucking get his land, and then he gets thwarted. So then this Franco Nero dude uses his ninja-ass skills to bust a cap and defend them. But then, like, he wears a white ninja outfit because he's a white ninja. He's a good one, see? But then it turns out this bad guy, he hires a black-suited ninja. And they fight, and that's what the whole movie's about. And
it turns out one ninja fighting one other ninja.
Well, it's about all the other people. There's gangsters, there's henchmen, there's all sorts going on. But in the end, it is the black and the white ninja fighting, and the black ninja turns out to be his fucking rival from ninja school. Wah-ha! That kind of shit, right? It's really fucking hilarious, and there's a lot of throwing ninja styles were very big in the 80s. I don't know if you remember that, Paul.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember we made them in metalwork?
I remember you made them in metalwork.
I made like five. All right, so... Anyway. It is so incredibly shit right now, but I loved it at the time because of the swords and the fucking Sai and all that sort of shit. But it was really a like seminal thing at the time. I had no idea that it was weird for like a French guy or Italian guy to be a ninja. It didn't matter to me.
Well, I was like, well, it wouldn't have been weird after another series that Canon put out, which I'll talk a bit about.
Oh, I'm sure it'll come later. Up later. Yes, absolutely. So yeah, Enter the Ninja. If you're looking for a laugh. I actually look upon it like that odd fondly, but I know it's so shit. So yeah, there's a lot of crap that me and the cousin at the end, the bad guy says, "You have fought with honor. I will now die with honor." By the way, everyone, I'm Asian, so it's fine for me to do that. Me and my cousins used to laugh our balls off of that shit.
Right.
Anywho, there you are, Enter the Ninja.
My number 10 is a very different kind of film. It's one of the biggest budget films that Canon ever put out there. It was one of the films that actually sunk them, started to sink them really badly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's one you're not going to agree with, Wayne. It's what? Sylvester Stallone's co-written what? Over
oh,
the Top.
Ew, that's the best one. Oh, man. You don't like Cobra? Bitch, please.
This isn't Cobra. Over the Top.
Oh, shit. Sorry. I thought you said Cobra.
No.
Sorry, slut. Over the Top. Fuck you. No, you know what? A lot of people think Over the Top is the worst thing ever.
You know what's really, really boring, Wayne?
What?
Arm wrestling.
Okay.
Let you know what's even more, makes it even shitter and more schmaltzy and mushy?
What?
Arm wrestling for your son.
Okay. Let me tell you about Over the Top that I know. I saw this at the drive-in. I'm old, everyone. I remember watching it going, okay, so there's competitive arm wrestling. And it was very like almost WWF wrestling. Not quite as specky, but like...
Funny that, because two convention. Guys walk in and yeah. grab each other's arm and push hard.
And they're all truckies
yep.
or, you know, similarly large men. And frankly, I actually found it quite riveting not at the time. And the son thing, I got it. Like the son's like, yeah, I can't stay with your dad because you're an asshole who's in jail right now and he fucking arm wrestles for a living. You know? So... I don't know.
And utter garbage.
Yeah, no, everyone hates
horrendous.
It.
Not everyone. I think this will be this is a controversial first pick, I realise. But it's probably a good time for me to say, I hadn't seen as many canon films as I thought.
No, there's a shit ton, isn't there?
There's so many of them. And I thought, oh, this will be the easiest list in the world. It'll just be having to decide which ones I should put in. I'm like, oh, actually, you know, there's some good ones, which obviously should not come anywhere near this list.
Mm.
And then there's some really bad ones. And there's just a lot that I'm like, oh, that looks really shit, but I never watched it.
Yeah. And there's a lot, it's some of them like you don't want to watch
or it. Or things that I just don't, I know I did watch, like Roy Scheider, 52 card pickup or whatever.
I've seen that one too and I can't remember pickup. Dick.
Can't remember anything about it.
Nope.
Because that's the thing, I haven't seen this film for 35 years.
Exactly.
A little bit of a risk with some, and of, the, some of these ones. Yeah. So number 10 for me, Over the Top. Oh, the other thing is Stallone was paid $12 million for this film, which was the highest in history at that point in time. The budget for this film was $26 million. So he literally almost took 50% of the budget. It made only $16 million back. Cannon were in trouble after this.
Really? This was... Wow! Mm. Well, I was one... You know, my money was in there, that $16 million. Well, my parents' money.
And that's okay.
Okay. My number 9, everyone, is a film with no other than Chuck Norris in it.
Yeah,
good. But also, no other than Sharon Stone and Lou Gossett Jr.,
ooh.
That's right. It is Firewalker.
Okay, I haven't seen this one.
Oh, dude, I saw this back in the Dizay.
Shocked.
Right? First of all, it's a comedy. That's the only good thing about it, if you're me. It's about a pair of down-and-out fortune hunters, Chuck Norris and Lou Gossett Jr., who they try and cash in on high adventure, and it involves, like, they're hired by this gorgeous woman who's like...
Sharon Stone?
Sharon Stone's actually an afterthought. They're mercenaries, and they go out with mercenaries, and they actually search for a treasure that they imagine exists. It's basically like a crap Indiana Jones, but there are other
ones
like
this. Won't
be the
last time we hear that statement today.
There's a few like this. This is the least offensive of them,
right?
Because it's a comedy. And Sharon Stone just turns up in it like for just like bits and you know, stuff like that. So, okay, this is kind of cool. But it's Chuck Norris doing quipping. And Lou Gossett Jr. is a bit Danny Glover-ish too. That's what it is. It's actually Lethal Weapon.
I assume Chuck Norris quipping is as bad as it sounds.
This
rings a vague bell.
One of the gags in the show is that he can't shoot. Like, he's got a gun, and he goes boom, 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 and misses all the time. And Sharon Stone goes, not very good with that thing, are you? And he goes, and he grabs her knife and gives her the gun. We'll swap then, right? Shit like that. It's shit like that.
Wow.
I know.
It was a simpler time.
No, it was. And it was. I remember actually looking at it going, well... It's a show and there's guns and it's like, it looks like indie and I guess fine. Right? But I even at the time was like, yeah, this is actually shit. So there you are. Firewalker, all 1986.
Right. Not dissimilarly, my number 9 is also could be described as a really shit Indiana Jones kind of knockoff, but this time with a female as the lead. It's called Sahara, starring Brooke Shields.
Ah, I've never seen this one. Bring it on.
I had watched it and I went back and rewatched about 30 minutes of it. Yes, I did a lot of reviewing.
What is it?
Re-reviewing. So it's basically, it's like set like 1920s-ish, and there's this great race that someone's organized to go through the middle of the Sahara, and there's warring, you know, tribes there.
Oh, yeah.
And
Brooke
Shields, obviously it's for men only because it's the 1920s.
Okay. Right?
And she's like, she dresses up as a man and puts a fake mustache on. To get entry in. And she's like 19 years old, and you know, she's gorgeous, Brooke Shields was back in those days, right? It's not really playing a convincing looking man, even with a pencil mustache on whatsoever. Anyway, she gets entered into the race and off she goes. But of course, they all get attacked by the warring tribesmen and whatever else. And Lambert Wilson, the Merovingian himself.
Oh, him.
Is playing one of the Arabs. with a bit of a dusty, you know, makeup on.
It was so fine, wasn't it? Remember when Mickey Rooney played a Japanese dude? Oh, my God. Anyways.
Sala's in this film as well.
Sala!
Yeah.
I'm the monarch of the sea. Sorry.
He's one of the leading tribes, warrior people, clan chiefs, whatever you want to call them.
He's got a beard. He could be anyone.
Lambert Wilson falls in love with Brooke Shields once she gets sort of captured. But
does he know she's a chick?
Well, yes. By that stage, it's all very, very
because sometimes you're just confused as a man. You know what I'm saying? And then later on.
About the desert long enough.
That's right.
And the race goes on, and eventually, of course, she wins. And it's just... it's everything that looks terrible about this particular era. Imagine they're aiming for Lawrence of Arabia in terms of how it looks with the adventure of Indiana Jones and falling so far short. The former MGM chief Frank Yablans described this film as the end of civilization as we know it.
When you know when the guy who footed the bill says that, it's fucked up. Yeah.
So there you go.
Sahara. Okay. Yeah. No, not familiar with it, but...
Don't rush out and see any of these.
Oh, no.
But go to YouTube and have a look at some of the trailers. They are hilarious.
Well, that's the thing about these. These are like so bad. This is as close to so bad they're good as it gets, right?
A lot of these films you can find in their entirety on YouTube because no one cares.
Yeah, no gives a fuck. I know. It's hilarious. And yes, well, from speaking of which, my number 8, we're still on ninjas here, everyone. It's American Ninja. Okay.
The first one.
Yes. There's like 20 of them, right? But American Ninja 1.
The best one.
The best. Well. Okay. So everyone.
Strap yourselves in, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, they were. All right. Again, everyone. I'm always really into ninjas as a teenager. And there was a few people on the film circuit, the B-movie film circuit, that were well known. There was people like Lauren Avenden. He did a few martial arts movies. There was a girl named Cynthia Rothrock.
Cynthia, for sure.
Yeah. And then there's Michael Dudikoff was the guy who did like American. And
Can we also not forget, of course, no gun, no knife, no equal. Jeff Speakman is the perfect weapon.
I've got the power. See, I like that show.
Clearly the marketing worked. And that was not a canon film. Anyway, back to American Ninja.
Yes, but so anyway, yeah, long story short, Michael Dudikoff is a dude and he ends up joining the army. He's like a drifter or whatever. And he's got, it just turns out that he happens to be a fucking ninja. He happens to have had some training back in the Dizay, all kinds of shit. And he does cool shit. He's got a good mate. He's an African-American, of course. And it was the 80s, you know.
What was his name real life? Is Steve James? That his name?
Yes, that his name is Steve James. Yeah. And it's for that reason, it's kind of fun to look at and watch and stuff like that. He does do semi-cool shit that I thought at the time. For example, when he and his platoon or whatever is set upon by, of course, ninjas, he does cool shit like grabs a toolbox, pulls out a screwdriver and throws that like a knife. And I'm like, oh, he killed like 4 guys doing that. I'm like, that's kind of fucking cool. Because he didn't have any shit on him, right? So he's improvising.
Hadn't done metalworking, made his 5 ninja stars.
Man, we did that a lot. So it is actually kind of, I remember it fondly, but it was really shit. It was really pure.
I have zero doubt you're
vintage
wrong.
80s action cheese. You know what I mean? Like that kind of shit. So
I definitely watched this movie. I definitely enjoyed it at the time. I'm in exactly the same boat that you're in. I did not revisit it for this because I went, you know what? This one can't be the worst. And I don't want to have just 5 American Ninja films on my list.
Well, you know,
I got to pick one.
Exactly. And you know what? The thing is, like, Dudikoff is just dispatching guys at a very record. What it is just him killing everyone in about, like, 20 guys in 20 seconds, right? And then when he's not doing that, the Steve James guy is doing a Rambo thing.
Yes.
He's got a fucking headband on and shit like that.
100%.
That's what's going on. So it's pretty fucked up, but, you know, it's part of my childhood, people.
Well, a film that's not part of my childhood. In fact, we revisited it at the request, I believe, of one Nicholas Haskins.
Oh,
ex film guy now, Nikolai's kitchen fella. And we watched this one, and yet he maintains it is one of the greatest action films of all time, Death Wish 3. Maybe called The Crackdown in some... I can't remember if that was 4 or 5.
Who cares? This movie fucking blows.
Oh, my God. Does it
this
suck?
Is the worst fucking film, man. I'll be straight up with you, man. It's my number 2.
Sorry, I've stolen some
No, it's okay. Because like when I watched this, I was like, are we being punked? This is bullshit. This isn't a real movie.
If he hadn't said, watch this and suffer in your jocks. Yeah, good one, Nick. You got us. Yeah. But no, this was fucking...
It's about what, Charles Bronson?
He loves
Bronson?
It. Yeah, yeah, Charles Bronson. Following up from, it was Paul Kersey.
Yeah.
Coming back from Death Wish 1, which is a, you know, renowned kind of grindhouse sort of film. Death Wish 2, which apparently is even worse than the first one in terms of misogynistic rapes and whatever else, it's horrendous. And here we are in Death Wish fucking 3.
God, and it's just about him, Charles Bronson, and he's like, you know, one of his friends got murdered by gang members, and then the cops bring in this dude to questioning, and the most stupid fucking shit ends up with him and the police chief walking around shooting motherfuckers, right? But all the way through, it was just, this movie has been shat out. It's horrendous. Cheesiest music you've ever seen. Punks robbing and killing an old dude and it makes a racket and no one hears. It's just fucking shit. It's really, really horrendously shit and really bad action. Remember that scene where he's like, the chief shoots one of the gang members and then says this line. It's a full shot, tight shot on him and he goes, I owed you that one, dude. That's what he fucking said. This fucking dude said that in this fucking movie. It is a piece of shit, even for the 80s. Who writes that shit? If I was the actor, I'd be like, I quit.
There are some very amusing moments in it, like when he walks out and they're trying to steal his car. He's like, hey, what are you doing there? Steal his car. That's my car.
The acting is
Charles Bronson by this stage had checked out. He didn't give no fucks. He just wanted a paycheck and he knew what kind of film he was into. He put zero effort into it. This film's garbage.
Dude, in that review we talked about, right? Like the woman in this film. Now, if you want to talk about a woman getting mistreated,
yep.
She literally turns up. All the bad shit happens to her just to move the plot along.
Yep.
And I'm like, wow, I actually feel like a pang of feminism here. Like, she's so hard done by, and that idea was.
And why would she even be into him? She's
a beautiful blonde girl, and he looks like a dog. He looks like an actual dog. You've said it so well
with some ridiculous fucking action and whatever else. And I don't care, Nick, that the big bad guy gets a rocket launcher to the face at the end. I don't care. It doesn't save the film.
You know
it's
what it
fucking
is?
Shit.
I'm not saying Nick is one of these, but hipsters love Charles Bronson films. Right?
They do.
Ask Justin. Right? It's like
not Nick, but Justin. Okay.
Yeah, but like, and so that's, there's like an ironic thing with this, but I just can't get there. I can't get there because it's too shit.
Neither can I. So that was my number 8.
That's one.
You're number 2. Damn.
I know, man.
First crossover.
My number 7, everyone, is definitely a part of my childhood. The film is called Bolero.
Oh, this one's Bo Derek, right?
Bo Derek, and
directed
right?
by her husband from Vague
That's
Memory.
Right. Now, everyone, let me tell you about
my
Bolero.
Wife is hot. I'm going to put her up on screen, dude, so you can all salivate over her.
Check it. The plot of this movie is that Bo Derek is a sexy-ass girl, and she's named Max, and she has graduated from boarding school and now wants to lose her cherry. That's literally said in the movie. I can't wait to fucking lose my virginity. So she fucks off to the Sahara.
How old is she in this fucking film?
I think. She graduates college, so she might be in her 20s, I would say. So she goes to the Sahara to find a sheikh.
Because that's where you lose your
virginity. That's where you lose your vag. And she says this word, I've come all this way to giving you something you may not even want. My virginity. That's what she actually says to him. She gets her naked, pours honey on her titties, licks the honeys off, and then falls asleep. That doesn't work out, so she goes to Spain, finds a bullfighter named Angel, who finally puts a load in her, and then when the stars... Then the dude gets gored by a bull and his dick stops working. It's a really weird fucking film. But there's a love scene that goes on for fucking 10 years. And it's because, like you said, the Bo Derek's husband is like, look how hot my wife is. And to be fair, it's fantastic. But
yeah, she was 26 at the time.
26.
Yep.
I reckon she's playing young 20s convincingly. But it's so cringeworthy when she's trying to act while she's naked and honey on her. It's just weird. It's weird. You got to check it out for historical and educational purposes.
Nope.
I'm not saying you, Paul. I'm saying some guys out there are going, honey titties, eh?
Sweet.
Jesus. Okay. So, yeah, Bolero's my number 7.
My number 7 is the sequel to a film which a number of people who gave us some feedback mentioned, if not in their worst 3, but in their honorable mentions. It's the sequel to King Solomon's Mines, and it's another shit-ass Indiana Jones knockoff. It's Alan Quatermain and the Lost City of Gold. Sorry.
Oh, please.
Alan Quatermain and the Lost City of Gold.
Not better.
Sorry, Richard Chamberlain and Sharon Stone again.
I'm telling you, man, Shazza is big in this industry. Now, hang on a sec, Paul. You're choosing the sequel.
As being worse than the first one.
Right. Now, is the first one on your list?
No.
Okay, good, because it's on mine. Let's talk about yours.
All right. Well, maybe we should talk about them together.
Okay, fine.
There's a great little bit of tidbit of information. This comes out of the Electric Boogaloo movie.
Yes.
Right, I'm sure you got this down in your notes about King Solomon's Mines. Do you have it?
I do indeed.
Go ahead.
If you're talking about Sharon Stone's bathwater?
No.
Oh.
No, what I'm talking about is... So, Golan, is it Menem Golan? Is that, am I getting
one
that?
Of them, yeah.
Yeah. He was like, get me the stone girl
yes.
to be in King Solomon's Mines. And what he wanted was Kathleen Turner from Romancing the Stone.
Yes.
The executives went out and got Sharon Stone because I thought that's who he meant.
Uh-huh. And then she got in there. And by the way, great. That's the best thing about this film, maybe. I don't know. The
second one, it is so bad. Racist caricatures.
James, oh, my God.
James Earl Jones as the sidekick tribesman who speaks with a weird cultured accent.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's James Earl Jones, right? Rubber, very rubber animals. Any snake or whatever you see, other than the real lion that they did have shoot for this particular film, looks so rubbery. Sharon Stone, she's a gorgeous woman. We all understand. She is so bad in this movie. At least Richard Chamberlain has an air of haughtiness.
You can tell he's an actor, yes. But it's really... You know what? We'll just talk about the both of them together.
And of course, he's gay, so there's zero chemistry between the two of them as well. Pretty sure.
He's gay!
Yeah, confirmed. So...
Okay, cool. Well, you know,
You can tell, though. Like, he's a fine leading man. He's the best thing about this particular film anyway. Like, he's trying to give that Indiana Jones swashbuckling fare, but unfortunately, he's just saddled with one of the worst scripts that's ever been put together.
Well, he's a respected actor. He's done a lot of great stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why it was weird that he was in this and in a sequel, bro.
And there's just misogyny up the wahey. Like, women characters in this film, the only good thing about Sharon Stone, she's wearing a pair of leather pants, tight leather pants. Mm-hmm. That's what she wears into the jungle because that's what you would do. This film has a final battle where Alan Quatermain climbs the top of a gold dome, literally made of gold, and he raises James Earl Jones' massive axe and lightning strikes it.
Really?
And then he smashes it down on the gold dome and the electricity flows through, not him, through the axe and into the gold, melts the gold, and the gold sloughs off the top of this dome onto the attacking forces, killing them all and not hitting a single defender.
Really?
That is the perfect synopsis of this entire film of how fucking terrible
it is. I've seen this one, but I've forgotten that.
It has the exact same score bit of music, which I reckon they play 70 times through the course of this movie.
Yeah.
And that's all they paid for, clearly. That's all they got. But it is horrendous.
This was a sequel, which means the one that I'm about to talk about is actually did enough business that it worked out. Yep. But that one there, people, yes, it's still like, it's basically happy white people fighting the superstitions of the simple black folk. That's the thing about, right? But I remember this, right? Yes, it's got shitty fake railroads and vegetables. There's a scene in the first one where Alan Quatermain and Sharon Stone are in a floating pot with plastic vegetables. It's so bad. Like, it's just like oh my God. I remember seeing it at the time after being really interested in the trailer as a kid. I go and I see it and I was like, genuinely shocked at how shit I thought it was. And that was the first time I'm like, wow, that was really bad. I didn't like any of that. And I was like a kid, man,
I liked this movie when I first watched it when I was like a 10 or 11 year old. Don't remember ever watching it ever again since, which is why it's not on my list.
Well, I mean, I get it. Like, it's Indiana Jones-y, so you went there and got
I know,
that.
I have no doubt it was shit. But this as a 10-year-old or 11-year-old, I think maybe it's 85, this film.
Yeah.
So I probably saw it, you know, around about the time we were 10 and a half, 11
that's
years
right,
old.
That's right. dude, apparently, Sharon Stone apparently was such a bitch here that everyone pissed in a bathwater.
Oh, that's what you've told
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, so that, like, and it's interesting because she was like a bit player and apparently hired on by accident.
By accident, yeah. Right?
And she's like, fuck everyone. They're like, yeah, it's pissing in the water. I mean, oh, wow. Damn, this is nasty. So, yes, worst, one of the worst, whatever, duo, you know, sequels ever.
Well, yeah, too. We didn't get a third one. Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God. All right, that's my seven. That wasn't your seven, was it? No. Six wasn't your six.
No, it was my... mine was six.
Yep.
Is The Hitman. Now, Paul, we're back in Chuck Norris territory.
Oh, are we?
Yeah. Chuck Norris is...
Pull up a pew. People are going to be here for a while.
Oh, I know. There's some Chuck Norris going on. It's about Norris, and he's got this greasy mullet, man. It's a fucking nasty-looking mullet, right? Black leather punk garb, and he's got a beard and all that sort of shit. And... it's about him who skillfully, he's an undercover cop. He maneuvers two gangs to kill each other and smokes the survivors himself and he walks out smiling. He's just a badass.
An all-around great guy.
All-around great guy. A lot of leather. Now, it's shamelessly weird, but there is a weird pussy-eating scene in it, Paul.
And yet this is on your
list. No, shut up. Well, here's what happens, all right? The scene is, there's an Asian woman who's like his whatever, the love interest or whatever, right? Yep. And he's sort of talking with her in an apartment and he sort of pushes her up against the wall and it was the 80s, so she went, ah. Yeah, and so he's like talking to her. Right? So she's obviously like fine with him being like forceful or whatever. And then he instead of like starting to kiss her or something, he just looks her in the eye, and then the shot of the camera is his face in frame, and then he just starts sinking out of frame below. He just starts going down on his knees. And then it cuts to her, and she's like, then enjoying him eating her pussy, I guess. Okay. Good. It's weird. He didn't even kiss her, Paul. He's just like looking at her and then goes straight down to the burg. What about, how was your day? Like, it was just like, it looked really weird when you look at it on the screen.
Thanks
like,
for asking, honey.
He's just going straight down on that. Like, just boom, that's it. And, you know, that was his move, I guess. But it was odd, everyone.
Straight down.
That's right. So the hitman is a piece of shit, and it's got an unrealistic burger eating in it.
Just puts it over the top. I'll tell you what puts my number six over the top. Also a Chuck Norris vehicle. It's called Hero and the Terror.
All right. Tell me about this. I've not even heard of this one. I don't even know what this is.
Now, we all know that Chuck Norris can't act. There's no one alive who would defend him as being a good actor.
No, you're right.
He makes Sylvester Stallone seem like he has Academy Award written all over him.
Because
like
Hanak. Right?
Yeah, especially once you get to his latter part. Copland and Creed and all the rest of that stuff. But back in the day, in the 80s, the range that even Schwarzenegger would show would be considerable versus Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris is his own bearded self, you know what I mean?
So it seems odd then that Chuck Norris would go after being in action film after action film, mostly martial arts, sometimes war films, which we haven't mentioned that series, don't know if we will.
No,
not on my list either. Nope. Missing in action, right?
That shit's good.
In this one, he's decided he wants to be in a psychological thriller because he's tired of being typecast.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this late in his career?
88.
Oh, okay. Later on, yeah.
So basically, he's saying, give me something else to do. So he's a cop searching for a serial killer who snaps women's necks. And the premise of the film is early on, he kind of corners him and is going to get killed by the guy, but the guy slips off a ladder and falls and knocks himself out. And so he gets captured. And the
Billy.
Yeah, the press dub him to be Hero.
Yeah.
As a result of this. And the other guy's the Terror. It's Hero and the Terror. Anyway, the guy escapes and they think he gets killed during the escape, but he doesn't. And then years later he's back and doing it again, and Chuck Norris is hunting him down again. There's two fight scenes in the whole film. It's just this ridiculous psychological thrill about him being haunted about I didn't really earn this name of Hero.
Oh my god. Really? Let me ask you this. Does he at least use martial arts in it?
Well, he's trying to, but the other guy's not a martial artist. He's just this really big dude.
Yeah, but it's like, kicking him and shit as opposed to punching
him? Other guy's just like just wearing it and just picking him up and putting him into a bear hug and shit. Like, it is so shit.
So he's trying to do a dramatic sort of role.
Yeah.
But then can you give us two fight scenes and it's a shit fight scene?
This film holds a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh.
Much haunted. 0%. And I rewatched about 25 minutes of it yesterday for this episode.
Yeah.
Such is the suffering we do for this show. And I hate myself for scanning through that much of it again. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is even worse than I imagined.
You'll never get that back.
This is 0 out of 10.
Okay.
Like, if I had to log it on Letterboxd, I just wouldn't give it a score. And I'd be like, fuck this film and everyone involved in it, including Chuck. Yes. Bring me all your memes.
Just a quick one. In the Talladega Nights, you know, the rednecks named their kid Walker and Texas Ranger? That always makes me laugh. So he did come back at least, but there you are. All right, nice one. My number five has got to be on your list because it's Masters of the Universe.
No.
What? Did you like it?
No, well, I don't remember it well enough. I remember liking it enough as a kid.
But I
haven't watched it again.
Oh, I have.
So I did have it there in desperation. It was going to be my number 10 at one point until I managed to find it. Oh, I have seen this one. Okay, great.
Oh, well, I had the toys, Paul.
Into Masters of the Universe.
Big shit, you swing and all that. Okay, and what they did with this
Castle
film.
Castle Grayskull and
Castle. You had Castle Grayskull.
Yeah.
Rich cunt.
Whatever the other Skeletor's base was called.
Yeah, that was it. Too. Yeah. Fuck, that's cool. Did you have any of the other cars and shit? Or like the
cars?
Yeah, he had like a Wind Raider,
nah,
which was...
Anyway.
Okay, sorry. But yeah, for the movie, right? With all of us talking about the magic of that world and the castles and the fucking vehicles and the mother and all sorts of shit, you then take a movie and you go, well, I guess the movie's going to look like that. No. What they did is they took the whole thing and said, we haven't got enough money. Let's shoot it in the fucking car park.
The car park, yeah.
Let's shoot it. The whole movie is in a fucking lot at the back of some fucking studio. And it's like, Man-at-Arms is there. And it's like, Teela and all of them are there. But there's no Eternia anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just like...
Good point. Frank Langella, very good as Skeletor.
What's weird about the Frank Langella, if you watch him, right? You can actually see... this is Frank Langella, right? He's doing a Skeletor, just the way that he's doing it, you can tell he's an actor. He's actually having fun with it. I reckon he was, but it still looked and sounded like a box of dicks, man.
Fair enough.
And Dolph Lundgren is He-Man. I mean, it fits. Yeah. I thought that was the most convincing part, but the whole time he was trying to fuck this girl, so it was really weird, man.
I would commit to rewatching it, but I just don't want to waste the time.
No, don't do that to yourself. But just so you know, if you want to see something, and Courtney Cox is in it, by the way.
All right, okay.
You know? And it's just the stupidest thing you've ever heard.
Fair enough. My number five, here's where I get my ninja on.
Bring
the
it.
American Ninja 3, : Blood Hunt.
Oh, which was the one with the
this
girl?
Is the one where this is the one where Michael Dudikoff said, I'm done, fuck off. Although he does come back in 4.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
So he's not even in 3.
And apparently it was one he didn't want to be typecast. Well done, Michael Dudikoff. It's great to see you as being the lead in anything else ever.
So tough.
But also because it was shot in South Africa and apartheid was still in at that point in time. And apparently he just, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to go over there and work in that culture. So, you know, good on him for having.
Okay.
Instead, they added in Hall of Fame actor David Bradley is the American Ninja. His responsibility now. So
that's the best tagline ever. Now it's this cunt. So wait, who's
Steve James is back?
Yeah.
Right, don't worry, he's still here. Although I think this might be his last appearance in this particular film. I could not believe watching this yesterday.
Yeah.
How shithouse the martial arts are.
Oh.
Like, it is embarrassing. I know we live in a world where Gareth Evans' The Raid films have happened and they've just changed the way
but you can tell shit with
and
shit.
And John Wick films and all this kind of shit. Oh my God. It is literally watching 5 people stand around the background doing nothing until the actor turns to face them.
Oh yeah.
It's that level of shitness.
Wait, is the lead guy, who's whatever you say,
David Bradley.
All right, is he a martial artist?
Yeah, he is. He's not an actor. So he can kick.
That's okay.
All he can do.
Yeah, see, that's kind of... That was initially Van Damme's shtick.
Yep.
He just kicks like a motherfucker, right? So I... okay.
But again, as much as JCVD is not my favorite person in the world, the range on him, as well as the charisma that he brings
absolutely
to those roles versus this guy, who is like a wet fucking rag.
Yeah.
And then Steve James, as you say, still doing, you know, African-American Rambo.
Yes.
At one point, there's 5 ninjas surrounding him, and he pulls out this sword, which has also got a bandana tied to the hilt.
Sure.
And then he's fighting them, and then he goes and pulls them apart. They're 2 halves, and now he's fighting with 2 swords.
Paul, this is weird, but see that? Look on your left. See that sword?
Yep.
That so splits into 2.
Wow.
I know. I've got one of those.
But the point is, why would you start this way when you got 5 people around
it's bullshit.
And not just go straight
exactly
to that?
It's like the guy who pulls his gun halfway through a fist fight. Why didn't you just pull it when someone turned up?
I just can't believe how bad. The bottom line is, of course, the story's shit. It's just a repeat of American Ninja 2. Of course, the acting's terrible, but you're there for the martial arts, and the martial arts are so, they defies belief. Go on to YouTube, American Ninja 3, Blood Hunt, and watch the fight scenes, and thank me later.
No, I'll do that. well, my number 4, everyone, was King Solomon's Mines. So back to you.
All right, my number 4. Now, I actually went and sought this out.
What?
I'm not going to pretend I watched every second of it, but I watched all 11 snippets on YouTube, right?
Uh-huh.
Which actually makes up about 55 minutes of the 88-minute run. Is it 88-minute runtime? 94-minute runtime. Actually, it's even longer than that. It was like an hour I spent watching these clips yesterday.
What is it?
It's Breaking 2, : Electric Boogaloo.
That's my number 3. So let's just go for it.
Now, I know the colon's funny, and I use it all the time, and well done, you know, but...
Bullshit well done. Go on.
There is zero excuse for this. I wrote down, as I was watching this, here are the things that blew my mind. The dance street fight under the bridge with a rival gang.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, bro.
That might be the dumbest scene in the history of, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, time.
Well done. Dude.
I was stunned. Okay. There's a brilliant scene. There is one brilliant scene.
Which one?
Where Turbo dances up the wall.
That's something you like, that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because when I saw it, I shat my pants.
I couldn't kind of see how they did it because it's one continuous shot.
Do you know
obviously,
what it is?
It's upside down.
No, but it's an Inception set thing.
They're actually rotating
brilliant. The set. Yeah.
Fucking brilliant.
No, because it's really good.
It really good.
Yeah, but it really unhinged me.
It almost ruined, though, when his girlfriend comes in and it's clearly a stunt double in the wide shot because she can't hold her feet on it. And 2, her acting is so fucking ludicrous when she sees him on the ceiling. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh yeah, dude. If
wonder
you think,
over.
Well, that was bad acting. The whole thing is bad acting, bro. It's that Turbo scene where he walks up. I remember watching
that's what
as
saves
a kid.
That from being number 1.
Really? Because funny thing, when I remember watching this as a kid, I was like, oh wow. First of all, everyone.
I should emphasize, I think I did watch this as a kid.
Yeah.
I just couldn't remember it all. So I tried to watch it much
of it again
yesterday.
I've only seen it as a kid. Hey, people. I like breakdancing, okay? I always have. I don't give a fuck, right? 1984, breakdancing. I was in year four. I saw that shit in primary school. Fucking kids used to put their cardboard fucking thing down and do breakdancing. By the way, I did a backspin last night. I mean, no, I actually did a backspin last night. I'm not doing a sexual metaphor. Like, I'm saying, like...
Yeah, like, but was it to get a woman in bed?
No, I was just to sit on there. Fuck you. I was out there, and I said, I wonder if I can still do a backspin. And I swung it, man. But I didn't do that thing where you end up with your hand on your head. This is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, time. Man, I remember this dude in primary school could do the caterpillar really well, and all the bitches liked him. So anyway, women, what I'm saying is...
Young women, girls.
Yeah. So... so yes, I liked this film very much. But when I saw all the stuff that was happening, like that turbo scene, it unhinged me. I'm like, wait, is it a real movie now? Because men can't do that. People can't do that. What's going on? Is he Spider-Man?
Well, it was a fantasy.
I know, but I didn't get it at the time, see? So
that's how good a dancer he is. We elevate. That scene was off the chain.
Yeah.
Well done. Okay, all right. Big tick.
To be fair, I do remember it, so yes.
But then after that, here are some other things that blew my mind. Fighting over a dummy and showing his mate how to slow dance. And it cuts to a real woman and back again. I'm like, what? And then they're like,
okay. Do you, go on.
Yeah, I mentioned the fight scene, but dancing in sync and mock throwing punches and blocking with, oh my God.
Oh no.
I don't know, I've ever seen anything so dumb.
Well, I remember at the time thinking to myself, oh, this is the new war. Because I remember that was the whole story. It said, if we ever have another war in the 80s, they used to say shit, it won't be nuclear weapons. It'll be breakdance fighting. Someone said that in the 80s, okay?
Patients suddenly shrugging off injuries to dance at the healing side of hot nurses in short skirt uniforms and heels, while the fat, unattractive matron initially tries to stop them before joining in.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, look, on some level, it's one of those musicals, which of course Paul loves, where there's no actual explanation for everyone breaking into song or dance. It right? is. So that's already going to give you the shit.
It did.
Right? Add to that the fact that there's zero plot. This is literally like...
It's well,
like
we have to defend our, whatever you call it, rec center from being bulldozed.
A rec center, where the kids are about to lose their clubhouse.
Yep.
So they put on a fucking show to raise the funds and fix it up instead of getting it to the evil developers. That's it.
Yep.
Right?
And then in the scene where the bulldozers finally rock up, there is a crowd of, what, 50, 60 people standing around, maybe 100?
Yeah.
The only person who stands in front of them is Turbo. I'm like, hang on, what happened to fucking solidarity?
I know, he's the skinniest motherfucker there is. Yeah.
He's still banged up from his injuries. So what the fuck is going on?
Oh my God. And you know what I think about it? The dancing at the wall is the best part.
And then I wrote, my last note was, berets on all the dancers in the climactic dance. Fuck me.
Oh, yes. Oh, dude, check this out. Look for a young and skinny Ice-T.
Yes, I saw that right here. Ice-T randomly showing up to rap during the
call
for
a
true scene.
Like a shitty rap. And it's just, wow, it's really bad.
There is zero excuse for this film.
No,
other than the fact they turn it around so quick to try and make money off the
7 months,
one.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
7 months after the first one. But I'll tell you this to you now, right? I have fond memories of watching it. Like, I actually remember seeing it. Because I was into breakdance. Beat Street was another breakdance movie, which was basically a drama. It had very little breakdancing in it. This one was all breakdancing on the ceiling.
It's dancing. I don't know how much of it's breakdancing,
well,
to be
by
honest.
That stage, it had moved on a bit. But yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure that the fight scene was a fucking breakdancing. They're just fucking dancing. I'm like, this is fucking lame.
But is there any chance you bought into them?
No.
Okay.
Not for a fucking second. Not for a nanosecond. If we take that one scene of Turbo out, this is number one with a bullet. Or maybe number two, because my number one I have personal problems with. But
okay.
We'll get there.
Yep. Good to hear. All right, nice one. Electric Boogaloo, that was your three.
That was my four.
And my three, so we're back to your three.
My number three has got to be your one or two.
Mm.
It is a film which basically killed Cannon, along with Over the Top, and Christopher Reeve's career.
Yep.
It is Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Now, Christopher Reeves, rest in peace, has to take some of this responsibility himself.
Yes.
He came up with the idea and he co-wrote this script.
That's right. And I believe the only way they got him for this...
Well, they made a three-picture deal or something.
Yes, made him do Street Smart and stuff like that. So, yeah. The what is weird about this film is that it's so incredibly, incredibly bad that it actually paved the way for... Kevin Feige said this. He said it was so bad that it was important in superhero film history because people held themselves to a higher standard after this film.
Makes sense.
So it's like there's a nuclear man, you know, and he's the bad guy and he fucking farts lightning. I don't know. It's
the whole thing is a metaphor against nuclear war, right?
It is. Or and that's allegory, why Christopher Reeve wrote it. This is my fucking, you know, this is my opus, my, you know, that kind of shit.
This is my... By War and Peace.
Well, why it became weird is that this is shot in the UK, but they're trying to make it look like New York. So they actually have fake fire hydrants, which they just stick in the background and go, it's New York. There was people carrying I Love NY bags and shit like that. That's how they made it
New York. That's how New Yorkers rolled,
well, exactly. They all have those. So it's really, really weird. It's about Luthor stealing a lock of hair, of Superman's hair. Then he makes Nuclear Man, yep. And then they fight in space on, like, the moon. Badly, slow-mo, shit-looking.
Yeah. Plasticky foam moon.
Oh, God. And also, every time the Nuclear Man blows something up, like the Great Wall of China, Superman flies past, and for some reason it goes, all the bricks go back and it rebuilds itself. Didn't know Superman had that power, because it's bullshit. And that's how they did this film.
The greatest shock of this film is that Gene Hackman came back, to be honest.
That is the biggest shock. Like, why?
You know, notorious hard-nosed asshole, Gene Hackman.
He probably was just paid enough.
Do you know the guy who directed this also directed Iron Eagle?
You're kidding. No, but I reckon the fact that, like, Superman magically repairs walls is showing you straight up that this is one of those things, like, we didn't shoot a scene to cover that, so what are you going to do, editing department?
We give zero fucks.
That's right. Boom. Off it went. So,
and yet this was supposed to be their biggest budget film.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it is. It killed the franchise dead for 20 years. It almost killed superhero films dead for as long as that. I know we had Blade in sort of the late 90s.
Yeah.
And I think also, was Canon responsible for that abortion of a Captain America attempt?
Yes. That's an honorable mention of mine. It is the worst thing you've ever seen. It's a Yugoslavian film. It's not even really legitimately like a Hollywood film. So it's weird.
Very few. Oh, no, I take that back. Of course, we had Batman. Batman was running through that whole era. But yeah, Superman was not seen hide nor hair of for 20 years.
That's right.
Yeah, that's my three, and it's somewhere on your list.
It's actually mine. Yeah, I'll just tell you right now. Death Wish is my number two.
Right.
So it's obviously my number one.
Number one. Fair, absolutely fair. I'm sorry to have stolen your thunder.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
I'll give you my two, then we'll hear your 10-3-2. My number two, both my two and my one, I did on friend of the show and podcasting mate of mine, Jason.
Yeah.
From Binge Movies Podcast in America. Now, some of the listeners have found us through him, and mm-hmm. I hope some of our listeners have gone over and found Binge Movies through me.
Oh, yeah.
Jason's show is basically takes a topic, five films, watch them, deep dive review on each of them, rank them. And one goes through to the finals to try and get into the vault to be preserved for all times beyond the end times.
Okay.
And this film, I can't remember what it was on, but what the topic was. The one that's number one, also on his podcast as well.
Yeah.
This film is the worst musical I've ever had the misfortune of sitting through.
Oh, God, a musical.
And yet, Menahem Golan directed it, and he honestly believed, and he couldn't handle it. Apparently, he became suicidal when this film flopped.
What? What is it?
It's called The Apple.
What is that?
From 1980.
Bloody hell.
It's set in the far-off dystopian future of 1994.
Around Ace of Base time.
Here's the byline or the summary. In the glitzy, glittering, futuristic world of 1994, music is king and the man who controls is all-powerful, malicious mogul Mr. Boogaloo. Boogaloo? Oh. Now he has his eye on two fresh-faced young singers, Alfie and Bibby, who score a hit at the World Vision Song Festival and fall under the irresistible spell of fame, money, and temptation.
World Vision.
I've never even heard of this movie. I cannot believe how much I fucking hated this movie.
Is it because of the singing or the shitness of the film?
All of it. Everything about this movie sucks. So she gets tempted, this couple, this duo, who's Catherine Mary Stewart. You might remember her from certain other 80s films.
Potentially.
He's a no one who I never saw in anything else ever again.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, he joins the resistance because she's been taken away from him. And
there's a resistance?
Yeah, against this whole music kind of mogul controlling everything. And it's this really belabored, awful metaphor. Like,
for what? Communism? What's going on here?
No, maybe. Maybe they're meant to be communists now that I think about it. I don't know. But, you know, music should be free for all.
Yeah, so it sounds like a crap version of Footloose. Like, with, like, you know, this town outlaws dancing.
I've never seen Footloose.
Have you?
I can only imagine it's a million times better than this
movie.
Footloose
is awesome, bro.
Exactly. Again, if you gave me that choice now, I'd watch Footloose. No worries.
Who's the fat Penn?
Chris.
Chris Penn.
Yeah.
Skinny and muscular in this movie. Forget about it. All right.
I challenge anyone to watch any of the music numbers from The Apple, which go on and on and on, I might add, forever.
This
film is only 90 minutes. It feels like 180.
And the dude got, like, suicidal over how bad it went.
Yeah, because it tanked so badly. It was such an absolute... It went to... Again, I would challenge most people who probably haven't heard of this movie unless they listen to the Binge Movies episode.
Not me.
It's just out there. And he legitimately thought it was going to be, I don't know, Les Mis hadn't been made yet. But
I reckon that still happens. I reckon that still happens now. You got this studio head who's like, I got this vision and it's completely wrong. Eh, what are you going to do?
God awful.
The Apple. All right.
Give us your 10-3-2 or 10-3-1, Wayne, then count them down.
Cool. All right. 10 was Enter the Ninja. Number 9 was Firewalker. 8, American Ninja. 7, Bolero. 6, The Hitman. 5, Masters of the Universe. 4, King Solomon's Mines. 3, Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo. 2 was Death Wish. And 1 was Superman 4.
Very nice. All right. Well, I'll give you my 10-3-2 before I just summon the courage to talk this one once again. My number 10, Over the Top. 9, Sahara. 8, Death Wish. 3, 7, Alan Quatermain and the Lost City of Gold. 6, Hero and the Terror. 5, American Ninja. 3, : Bloodhunt. Which I need to give some credit here. I'm pretty sure the first time I ever heard someone do the colon gag, it was Joey from So Wizard Podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so not yours?
Attributional credit to him. I've just taken it and I've run it into the ground. He will run it every so often. But if you're on a good thing, I say, Joey, stick to it.
No, that's not comedy, Paul.
4, Breaking 2, : Electric Boogaloo. 3, Superman 4, : The Quest for Peace. 2, The Apple. And my number 1, no question, is Going Bananas.
All right, so let's talk about Going Bananas, because I believe I may have seen this film, but I'm not sure.
Directed by household name Boaz Davidson, who has directed actually some films that you might recognize, including The Last American Version. Lunacop, Private Popsicle, Hot Bubblegum, and Hospital Massacre.
Are you saying random words? What the hell? All right, go on.
This is a film which stars Dom DeLuise.
Yeah, that's why I think I've seen it.
Yeah. So basically, it's like this rich kid.
Yeah.
And the rich kid, and he is his guardian, and they go through the African jungle for whatever particular reason.
Oh, that's why he's white.
And he's got an African sidekick. It has all the racist overtones and undertones the best of the King Solomon's Mines. That's a big enough problem in and of itself. But then, this is a film which wants you to believe that once they track down this monkey, who is literally a little person in a suit the entire time. The entire time. Wayne, they've got no stock footage of monkeys. What, none at all.
Wait, it's a
chimpanzee. It's a chimpanzee, right?
But in how convincing?
Not at all. Not even for 1 second.
Why would you even think a little person in a suit would look like a chimpanzee?
This poor little person has gone through the ringer. I can only imagine being in this, I don't even know if it's shot in location, but they certainly look like they're in the African savannah.
Wow.
In this monkey suit.
Yeah.
Running around, acting, and forming a friendship with the kid and saving him from...
Bloody hell.
And then starting to speak, Wayne. In this film...
The chimpanzee starts to speak.
Starts to speak.
Hang on, before you go any further, is it a comedy?
Yes, it's meant to be.
Okay.
It's meant to be a comedy.
All right, so good.
Ask me how many times I laughed, Wayne.
Yeah, I don't expect that happening.
Bonzo Love!
That's how it goes?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Bonzo doesn't just speak in this film. By the end of the film, Bonzo flies a fucking plane.
The chimpanzee. Okay, but is there any chance that the ridiculousness worked for the tone? No? I'm just trying to give it like hot props here. I haven't seen this one because I would remember that, I think. Horrendous shit, you say.
Bonzo loves whatever the kid's name is in the film. Ben.
What?
It haunts me to this day how much I hate this movie.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a real boner for it. Like
1987, there is no worse canon film that's ever been made. The fact that they just shipped this out, this had to have been affected by what you described.
Yeah.
Horrendous acting.
Mm-hmm.
No special effects whatsoever.
Yeah.
Dom DeLuise trying to do Dom DeLuise's sort of late career bit.
I know him a little bit from stuff that I've seen. Yeah. So I know it was after his time.
And he looks like a fish out of water. Even he knows that he's in shit. And then we just have a storyline that features a chimp. It's a monkey. It's a circus chain chimp. I don't give a shit. Show me a fucking chimp that speaks proper human words and speaks more of them and then flies a plane.
Sometimes
it just comes out of nowhere. You know?
No, it's going to be... look, I already just hate it. Just listening to you. I hate it already. So
my number one, Going Bananas. It did drive me that way. I have no honorable mentions, Wayne.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So I have that Captain America movie, which is the piece of shit. Look. I initially put Street Smart on here, which is a very hard-to-find Christopher Reeve movie that he did with Canon. But then looking at it again, and could have just like... It's actually not bad. It's actually one of their better... It's actually really harsh. He's like a journalist who fakes some murder story, and it's like it's mob shit. But yeah, pretty much it's... Yeah, that's the only other one on the list.
All right, fair enough. That's Alice. What about yours? We wrap up every episode of the show with your feedback at the topic at hand in the segment that's called The Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
kicking off this week's Pop 10 with the aforementioned Joey DiCarlo from the So Wizard podcast. This is actually a pretty tough list to make because I love so many of the movies that Cannon made.
Mm.
Number 3, American Ninja 3, : Blood Hunt. Thank you, nice Joey. One. Number 2, Alan Quatermain, The Lost City of Gold. Number 1, Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Ah.
John Huslander said, number 3, Hercules with Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, I saw bits of it and went, fuck that.
Number 2, Revenge of the Ninja. Wayne, we are soul brothers in wanting to be ninjas in the 80s.
Damn right, son.
Number 1, Superman 4. John wrote this, : The Quest for Peace. More like The Quest for a Piece of Crap.
So there's no way this one doesn't win, right?
What do you mean?
Like, this is the worst. Like, you say, I know you say that that one, the Going Bananas, is the worst one. But this is, like, popular.
Oh, because people saw it.
Yeah.
No one saw
True, Going true, true.
Yeah, no, no doubt, no doubt. Matt Evans said, number 3, Platoon Leader. That's Dudikoff with a gun.
What?
Breaking 2, number 2, Ruin the Magic of the First Film. And then a couple of people started having to go up, Matt, saying, no, come on, Breaking 2 is amazing.
Yeah, again, this is the type of thing where people are fond of it because it was so shit, but they didn't know.
I have a message to those people.
You can't handle the truth.
Breaking 2 is a massive piece of shit, Matt. Don't feel apologize. Don't have to apologize for music, hating man. Something.
Ain't no stopping us. That shit there. No, that's good shit.
Let's fight by fucking dancing.
Yeah, man.
Number 1, American 3000, Mad Max 2, Wannabe with Bigfoot, dreadful production and editing.
Mm-hmm.
Not there we go. Nicholas Haskins from Nikolai's Kitchen. Do check out his cooking show, Cooking and Positivity Show, I think it's maybe a better description. Cracks Knuckles. Looks like that Canon Quarantine series is about to pay off. Number 3, Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, where Superman gets scratched and almost died or simply shouted, no, the people! A nuclear man attacked them but didn't do anything to stop him. It is absolutely hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2, Invasion USA. Fuck Chuck Norris. And
fuck off. That was good stuff. Invasion USA was a seminal fucking like 80s bullshit film, along with a few others I could mention. Keep going.
A tad rough, but okay. And number 1, King Solomon's Mine. Oh, Some of the worst, most misogynistic writing I've ever been witness to in a film. I was so angry when I watched this movie. It's a bag full of assholes. A lot of canon movies have a bad habit of writing women whose only character trait is shrieking. That's a very good call. Mina Harker, aforementioned, said Hercules again from 1983, or Hercules 1983. Number 2, King Solomon's Mine. And number 1, Bonzo loves Paul. Love, love. Going Bananas.
Damn. I wonder how many people have seen that shit.
Thank you for that, Mina Dan. Mario Leon, patron of the show, said number 3, The Barbarians. Haven't seen that one.
I saw the video cover.
Yep. Number 2, Master of the Universe. And the number 1 that literally killed Christopher Reeve's career, Superman 4, Quest for Peace.
There you go.
David Power, top little page of the show, said number 3, Hercules. Haven't seen this since the 90s, so it may be so funny it's good. Number 2, Master Universe. Number 1 again, Superman 4.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if I see any mention of Tough Guys Don't Dance, someone's getting a dick punch.
Wait, he likes that?
Or lady equivalent, I guess so.
Mm.
Haven't seen
All
it.
All right.
Haven't seen it. And then the man himself to wrap it up. We didn't even get 10 this week. We had a whole bunch of people replying to these other ones, but people were struggling to put it together. From Sire himself, here is worst 10, but he does make the qualification. The only two he doesn't like are 1 and 2.
Okay, go on.
Number 10, Street Smart.
Yep.
9, Superman 4. So he likes Superman 4.
Shit, that's low.
Number 8, Death Wish 2.
Yep.
Number 7, Death Wish 3.
Yep.
Number 6, Death Wish 4. Number 5, 10 to Midnight. Number 4, Missing in Action. Number 3, Missing in Action 2.
Missing in Action is okay, people. What? POWs? Like, it's all right.
You've really upset Wayne there.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Good on your side. And number 2, Master Universe, so he doesn't like that one. And his worst canon film of all time is Death Wish 5.
Oh,
can you imagine how bad Death Wish 5 is if it's worse than Death Wish 3?
3 is already I'm out, and then there's no way even get to 4, so forget about it. Oh, well, I can only imagine.
Thank you, Sai, for the topic. Thank you for your support of the show. Thank you, everyone who supports the show, listens, writes back, gets involved with us. I know this is a weird topic this week. If you've gotten this far in the episode, we really, truly do thank you. We hope you've had some fun listening to us rag on some films. I think next week we need to get back into the positive, Wayne.
Sure. Let's do that.
So how about top 10 movies where the villain wins?
Very positive.
Well, it's positive if you're positive a villain. Positive,
exactly. Sure. All right. Villain POV. That's what we're doing next week.
Movies where the villain wins is the subject for episode 364.
Yeah.
Next week on the show. All right. Well, Wayne, how did the good folk get in touch with us? Let us know what they thought about the show, or indeed give us feedback in general.
Google the Countdown Podcast. Find our socials. We do have a website, which I still haven't updated. I'm sorry. It's the Countdown Podcast. Was it?
Countdownpodcast.com.
There you go. But we'll get to that. Absolutely. Otherwise, you know, you'll find merch and shit.
Mickey Mouse. That's right, operation.
You know what? Just look at the links in the show notes and join like the Countdown listener community, and fucking join Patreon if you want. We got a lot of nasty shit on there that you might like. And that kind of shit.
Wayne's promising more nasty shit in the near future.
There's gonna be nasty shit in there.
Yeah.
Or
All right. That's it for us today. Oh, Podbean, also where we host the show. Do exactly. Follow us along there. That's it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Warren.
And this has been The Soundboard. Canon made a lot of shit films. We'll catch you next time. See ya.
See ya.